Hello, and welcome to the Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline. In this Back Issue Spot, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Future Quest 1 through 12. Came out in 2015, 2016, maybe even dived a little into 2017, I forget. 12-issue series where Jeff Parker, and he was taking a lot of the space and adventure Hanna-Barbera characters and kind of sort of doing like a Crisis-level event for them. James, how familiar were you with these cartoon characters?
I was vaguely familiar with about half of them. I would say probably Space Ghost was the most familiar. Mm-hmm. I just remember seeing him the most. The dinosaurs, which they called them the...
Herculoids.
Herculoids, yeah. I remember seeing maybe an episode or two. And Johnny Quest was, honestly, I knew of the character, never watched him. And the other ones were all just completely obscure to me. Like Birdman and you know, the characters like that. Mitor.
Space Ghost, I knew. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to avoid that character. And he's a cool character, so I'm not trying to avoid it. Johnny Quest, I'm familiar with, but from the Kimiko comics from like the 80s, I don't know if I've ever watched a full episode of Johnny Quest.
Oh, so we're in the same boat. I hadn't either, so I have no nostalgia there, you know, or background on the character, really.
Herculoids, I remember. Birdman, passingly. Frankenstein Jr., I remember. Galaxy Trio, I remember. Impossibles, I remember, but their cartoon was so cartoony that it was a little bit of a turnoff. Mitor, I don't even know that I'd ever seen. Dino Boy was actually in this, although kind of downplayed a bit. And it was, I think, the other feature from the Space Ghost stuff originally. But, I mean, these are characters from 1964 to 1968-ish. And we've already done one book club on this, covering the first three issues.
Yep.
After this episode gets released, because I'm going to try to get this one up pretty quick, we're going to do at least one more book club, probably more like three different sittings on it, because I don't know that we're going to get further than three issues a shot. But I've got to say, I really enjoyed this. Do I think it was good is the other question.
Oh, okay. All right. And I'm on the opposing side. I mean, we were excited. I think you and I and the whole book club for Jeff Parker and Shaner, the artist.
Evan Shaner,
to get together again because we had enjoyed the Flash Gordon series so much. And I felt like Flash Gordon was written better. And not only that, it was more enjoyable. And this, I felt like, was the opposite of that.
Well, I think with Flash Gordon, singular character, singular property, revitalize it, do a run with it. That's pretty simple. And I don't want to say simple. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Here, they're taking somewhere between half a dozen and a dozen properties from decades in the past, having to bring them to the modern day. Granted, this was done 8 years ago, so I mean, we're a little past that. But it was still 50-year-old material for the most part then. And take it from light Saturday morning cartoon fare to more standard modern comic book fare.
Yes.
Give them some backstories, reinvent a few characters, retool a few here and there, and tell like a crisis level event.
Yes.
For readers that may not know some of these characters, may not know any of these characters, may not know all of these characters, kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And I think that's a tall order.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I go into properties like this, and currently we're over at Image, we're seeing that with G.I. Joe and Transformers. These properties that really aren't intermingled that much, and they want to create this shared universe or whatever, you know, like you said, a crisis event here, or we're going to create the Energon universe over at Image. And I understand maybe the desire to do that, you know, corporate thinking, hey, synergy, and, you know, this is popular. Maybe if we get both of these communities together, the greater than they are individually, the sum of the whole. And I think it doesn't need to be done. At times, I think I would have enjoyed, like, currently what Dynamite's doing is they're doing a Space Ghost comic. And I didn't pick it up, but I know Percy is on the Slack channel. Okay, yeah, he's been talking about it too, that he liked it.
I've been getting it and I've been enjoying it.
I don't feel like we need to we need to force these properties together into something a little bit confusing.
That's the thing, is some of these properties did intermingle back in the day.
Oh, and see, I didn't watch them that much. So.
I didn't either, but Wikipedia is my friend.
Oh, okay.
So, like, there was a Space Ghost story, I think, at the end of the first season.
Okay.
And it covered, like, 2 weeks' worth of stuff, because it would be a half-hour show with three installments.
Okay.
And it'd be like a Space Ghost, Dinoboy, Space Ghost kind of a thing. But for the last two of that season, it was all Space Ghost. And he would be getting, it looked like, bounced across time and space, so he'd wind up back and interact with Mitor, or the Herculoids, or Moby Dick, because that was one of the other things they had going at the time. Or Shazam.
Okay.
And it'd be a quick, he gets into a little bit of a trouble, other hero bails him out, they say, oh, great to meet you, you seem like a swell guy, and Space Ghost has to go back to his little adventure, fighting whatever he was fighting at the time.
Okay, so just like surface level, they kind of brought him together and introduced him.
All they had was surface level on Saturday morning cartoons. There was no major depth back then.
That's true. I mean, honestly, these things were created just to entertain us as little kids. You know, eating our bowl of cereal, waiting for the parents to wake up because they slept in.
Yeah. But that's where Johnny Quest is kind of odd man out, because that started as a primetime thing.
Which I thought was weird. I told you, I grew up, you know, my parents had one TV until I got older. And I'm assuming my parents, they never watched cartoons with me because I never saw Johnny Quest. I'm surprised they had cartoons at night.
Well, you're just young enough that the cartoons at night were, other than The Simpsons, not really a thing.
Yeah, I remember The Simpsons, so yeah, they weren't...
Later and stuff, but like The Flintstones and some of those other things started on prime time, and then other cartoons, more of the cartoonish type, like The Impossibles, would be the Saturday morning fare.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
And then other things that were sometimes prime time things would get, you know, syndicated and whatnot, because like when I was watching Space Ghost and stuff, it was not the first airing. Some of this would just, they would keep reusing the material for years and years.
Oh, yeah. And honestly, there's a cost savings to it.
Oh, yeah.
There's familiarity. And probably my parents used to watch shows, and I was watching the same shows that they grew up watching. You know, they had me watching Father Knows Best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I grew up watching, but they probably saw it when they were young.
Well, it's a totally different era of television, where we've got a bazillion channels to fill and fill them. Whereas back then, there were the three major networks, the UHF and one or two local channels.
Yep.
And they were struggling to fill them because they didn't have the subsequent decades worth of material to use. So reruns of I Love Lucy, Dick Van Dyke, Gilligan's Island.
Yep.
Get Smart, Beverly Hillbillies, the classics, or what became the classics. Maybe not so much because they were great, but because everybody saw them at some point.
Yeah, and my parents, I know this for a fact, they didn't like my older sister and I watching cartoons a lot, that we'd watch them until they woke up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I watched more of the I Dream of Dreamy, Beverly Hillbillies. It was more the live action stuff because they would watch it too.
Yeah.
Versus the cartoons. So that stuff is more nostalgic for me, which is weird hearing a kid say that, but it is.
Well, again, back in that day, most families had the one TV.
Yeah.
Whereas now we each have how many screens we can look at?
Multiple. Yeah.
I think part of what I loved about this was as much what they were trying to do as what they did.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, particularly having just read last night the second half of it, or reread it, because I read this when it all came out, I noticed it a bit, and we talked about it some in the first three issues, but the number of artists on this project was surprising.
Yes, it was. It was very inconsistent, and some issues I loved, and others I was like, ooh, this isn't good.
For me, the one that really hammered it home, I think, was issue 7 with Ariel Olivetti art.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Beautiful art.
Yes.
But in a painted style, and everything else, as one would expect, is a more of a cartoony style. So when you've got not just different artists, but jarringly different art styles, sometimes between issues, sometimes within an issue.
Yeah.
I gotta wonder, was there some background drama behind the scenes on this?
Yeah, it's weird. That would make sense because they were so different. And like you said, mid-issue, sometimes the art style would just change. And it was a little bit jarring. And I think that pulled me out at times from enjoying the story here and there. You're reading it and you're like, oh, okay, this is different. You know, you just get that sudden little jolt.
Well, and the other thing that pulled me out, and we discussed it in the book club we've already had, and I think it'll come up in later ones probably, was at the end of the first issue, we get Johnny Quest and Haji seeming to meet Space Ghost.
Yes.
And in the subsequent issues, the story doesn't seem to move that much further from that point. I mean, by the end of the 12 issues, we have, I think, finished that day.
Yep.
So narrative time-wise, there's not a lot going on. But story-wise, they kept going back. It's like, well, this is how Birdman got into the thing, or here's what was going on with the Impossibles that led to them coming in, or the Herculoids, or here's the Herculoids, some of their backstory, or, again, the origin of the Impossibles. And some of that was cool, some of that I enjoyed. Did it feed into the main story? No, not at all.
I agree, yeah.
And I thought that was frustrating. I also felt Jeff Parker, and I'm going to blame him because he's the writer, but maybe it was somebody else, had clear favorites of these characters and others he just didn't seem to care about.
I felt that too. Yes, there were some that he showcased and others that were almost forgotten at times, almost like he had to mandatorily by contract put them in.
The Galaxy Trio, I don't know that they ever say a word.
Yeah.
They were included in a token gesture at best.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, Mitor doesn't show up, but we get a modern-day version, which I was okay with. We do get the actual Mitor in an issue. But then the other one that I found kind of funny, because I think it was in the fourth issue, we've got the kid and the caveman.
Yes.
That's Dino Boy and Ugg or whatever, his kind of adopted father from, again, his cartoon. And like they're there for an issue, and then kind of there's a line of dialogue saying, oh, I think they'll be all right, and never mentioned again.
Yeah, that was surprising. There was different things in here. Some of the things that happened from the book club discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And we had fun. It was good getting all the people back together again. But it was interesting, like you said, how some characters were forgotten, some were showcased. And then all of us kind of unanimously were surprised that we went through all these issues. And even we had read the first six issues, even though we didn't make it through that mm-hmm. in the book club. And how little Space Ghost we saw, which you would think he would be a premier character because he's one of the more popular from the set that we're looking at. Him and Johnny Quest, I would say, are the two names that people would recognize.
If you look at the first issue's front cover, and it's a wraparound cover.
Yeah.
On the front and center is Johnny Quest, Haji, and Bandit. Above them is Space Ghost, Jan, Jason, Blip. Clearly the anchor characters of the story.
Correct.
We've also got some of the Herculoids, and we've got Birdman. And I think they were featured decently enough to put them there. And then on the back side of the cover, which is still, again, part of the wraparound, we've got the Impossibles and Frankenstein Jr. and stuff in kind of the next position with Mitor kind of hidden in there in the background. And then way off on the left, although prominently featured, surprisingly so given how little they were in the story, was the Galaxy Trio.
Yeah.
So I think Johnny Quest and Space Ghost, I think, are the big name characters. So having them as the anchors made sense. Having Space Ghost kind of be almost a ghost in the story. I mean, he's there, but he's not there.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird.
That was the part. It was weird. I know Brawlinator, he used an interesting term. We won't use that. But it was a tease. Like, you kept seeing him in the background, but for a panel, and he'd disappear. And it really wasn't until about, you know, three quarters of the way through these 12 issues, you know, maybe around issue 9, that he's really getting showcased and interacting with the story other than just laying there. Or this phantom appearance. And I thought that was bizarre because he was so prominent. He's so distinct. He's one of the characters I remember from back then, you know, on the cartoons. And I'm like, to not make him more of a focal point of the story just seemed like a miss.
I would say out of this batch of characters in this kind of universe, he's the closest equivalent to like a Captain America or Superman kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Like a Superman, Captain America. Perfect.
The natural leader of the group.
Correct. And yet he wasn't there to lead.
He only seemed to come in at the last minute to orchestrate, but not lead.
Exactly. I felt like he was misused, and there was one other gripe that I had. But yeah, he was definitely one of the things that I just really didn't like. I read the whole thing, and I was just like, I felt like this is a character, maybe he could have stoked some nostalgia for me and used him and reminded me of why I liked the character from back then, you know, watching cartoons when, you know, 40 years ago, 40-something years ago.
Well, and that's the purpose of these types of stories. You go in because there's one character you love and you're curious about the rest. The goal should be for you to come out with a new favorite, or another new favorite, I should say, out of it. It's like, okay, I love Johnny Quest, but ooh, wow, the Space Ghost looks cool, the Herculoids are Frankie, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they accomplished that. And even if they did, because these were modernized, more straight comic book version characters versus cartoon characters, because, I mean, The Impossibles, I'm going to use them as the clearest example of this.
Yeah.
They had a more kind of squat, exaggerated style. It was played for laughs. They were like almost a Beatles-ish type group at the time. Here, they look a little more, again, standard superhero fare type stuff for comics. They've got a serious origin. They've got a backstory. They've got basically a lot more substance to them than there was ever room or intent to put in the cartoon.
Yeah.
So if you like them here, you're going to look at the cartoon and you're like, what the hell? And vice versa, you like the cartoon, you're going to look at them here and you're going to be like, what the hell?
Exactly. You know, nobody's enjoying themselves. The other thing that I thought, just for me, that was a miss, and this is for me, and maybe you too, you didn't know some of the characters, I didn't know some of the characters. And I remember we were going through the first three issues in the book club and we're looking at things and we got the one panel. And one of the characters almost used like a force field type thing.
Oh, yeah. It was Birdman, I think it was. Yeah.
Birdman. That's it. And we all were like, huh, I didn't know he could do that. I didn't know. I thought he just flew around. Even though we're getting the band together, I felt like there was no introduction if you didn't know these characters. There's no, here's the power set. There's no, here's the origin story. So there, I felt like I read this whole thing and the characters were still strangers to me at the end of 12 issues. A little bit. I mean, I knew a bit. Bits and pieces, but I feel like I still don't know these characters that well.
Yeah, I see that. I kind of sort of agree with it, although I had more background going in. But part of it is I hadn't watched these since Saturday morning way back when.
Yeah.
So at some point I knew what Birdman could do, I just don't remember. And it's funny because like with him, some of it comes out in the story, we get a little background here and there, but do we get a full itemization of his powers? No, not really. However, for the Impossibles, we absolutely do.
Correct. They are the one exception to the rule.
But we also got some good background on how the Herculoids kind of came to have the humans with them and stuff like that. So I feel they erred on both directions on that.
Yeah, it was inconsistent. Some characters got a little bit of a background and others, it was just assumed. It was left to you to know what these characters did or who they are. And I just found that weird. That just like the inconsistencies with the art, there was inconsistencies with the treatment of the characters by the writer. So I think that's what made it feel so odd to me, this whole book. I'm like, nothing was consistent.
Well, I think some of the characters, it felt like their opinion was, these are viable characters. Johnny Quest, Space Ghost, etc.
Yes.
Others, I think they felt the need to salvage in some way, shape, or form, like the Impossibles or maybe even Frankenstein Jr. Others, they didn't know what to do with, like the Galaxy Trio, and hence did nothing with them.
Yep.
And the one that got me, because I knew nothing about Dino Boy going into this, but since we had the book club meeting, I've done a little research. And again, that's the boy and the caveman guy on the cover of number 4 there.
Yeah.
And they're in the story, but the fact I didn't realize they were name characters, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And arguably were as prominent as the rest of these properties back in the 60s, which is not to say they were prominent, but you would have watched almost as much of Dino Boy as Space Ghost, because they were in the same half-hour slot. Granted, Space Ghost was the A character, Dino Boy was the B character.
Definitely. Very weird, yeah?
Yeah.
And what I'm saying with this is, I think if you're a fan of the properties, and I think we were talking about, it's Jason Z from the Slack channel.
Yeah.
He's a big fan of Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest, yeah.
And he may be a fan, this is me just guessing, I don't know, maybe of the other Hanna-Barbera characters. Someone who has that background and the nostalgia for this, and they watched a ton of it, or maybe they rewatched it later in age. I think there's going to be moments in here that you'll really enjoy and you're happy to see them. But if you don't have that familiarity, you get a little bit nitpicky because you don't have that nostalgia factor there. And I think that's where I found myself. I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like this. And it's because I'm not happy to see, you know, Birdman because I never saw the guy before.
Well, there's no nostalgia to be had for a character you're only passingly familiar with at best.
Yeah. And I think that's the same problem I had with when we read Power Rangers. Remember the big...
Yeah, the Shattered Grid stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I felt like, oh, this is a cool story. It was written better than this, I felt like.
Yes.
But I was like, okay, this is a cool story. I have no clue who these characters are. I don't feel anything for them. And I'm like, it's written well, but I couldn't care less. And that's at times how I was feeling with this is like, okay, that's written okay. But I don't care about this character. I don't care about any of these characters. But every now and then there's a few. I was like, oh, why is Space Ghost disappearing into the ether and going away.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I was seeing this when it came out as DC making a serious attempt to take a property from a sibling branch of the corporate empire of Hanna-Barbera, bring them into comics, make a serious go at them, use this as a launching point, and then we'd get a small line of Future Quest-type titles, you know, a Space Ghost miniseries here and there, maybe an Impossibles one or Johnny Quest or something like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely didn't happen. Because other than this, a one-shot with Adam Strange and a 12-issue Future Quest Presents, they did nothing else really with these characters.
Wow. And now the property, I don't know if all of them, but we know Space Ghost is over at Dynamite.
I don't know if we've seen any of these other characters really since. Johnny Quest would be the other one I would expect to get see farmed out somewhere at some point.
Yeah.
Because it has been a few times, I think, in the past. And it seemed like, again, they were building this up to do nothing with it. And I was a little puzzled by the attempts, which I feel were reasonably successful attempts, to start tying everything in together better.
Yes.
I think they added some backstory and changed some stuff up with Frankenstein Jr. and Buzz, because I thought it was his dad that was around in the cartoon. Here, it's the mother. But then there's this agent. She seems to have connections to Birdman, to the Impossibles, and is kind of acting as kind of the glue for the Earth side of heroes. And then we've got all this space stuff. And we talked about this during the book club. I think it might have been interesting if they had done this as two concurrent miniseries, kind of a Space Quest and a Future Quest or something like that. Space Quest being Space Ghost gathering the space heroes for yes. one side of the adventure. The Future Quest or whatever being Johnny Quest's group gathering the Earthbound heroes for another adventure and realizing they're coming at the same threat from two different angles.
That would have been the perfect way to tell this, because you'd spend a little bit more time with each one of the space characters or the Earthbound characters, maybe get to know them a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and setting up the bigger thing, which in this story, I felt around, and I could have this wrong because I read it a little while back, but around issue 9, we start getting momentum in the story and the fight for the universe. But that's 9 issues to get to the momentum because they're doing all this other you know, stuff. And I, the story you're talking about would have been a much more enjoyable read, I felt like, the two separate miniseries.
Well, and I think you also could have interleaved them kind of like how House of X, Powers of X were.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you could have told the story in about 6 months versus about a year or longer. I forget how long this took to come out.
Yeah.
And I think that would have helped.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, it feels like some of these characters are introduced and it takes a while for them to do anything.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Jeff Parker didn't do himself some favors here. And he is a good writer. I still like him as a writer. And so when I say this about him, there's a caveat. I still like the guy. But I think the main part of like him, like you said, showing that intro from different viewpoints of different characters and not having a momentum for several issues, and I'm thinking several months at that time, or me just reading it back to back, you're boring me at this point. You know, I'm getting a little bit bored here. Okay, let's move this along. And that's just unfortunate.
Well, and it felt like there was one point where they had to introduce a little conflict just to slow the progress down.
Yeah.
And that actually felt a little bit in parallel with about the same point in Crisis on Infinite Earths where a similar thing happens. And it's like, I'm not saying he borrowed it from there. I'm just saying it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's true.
And again, I enjoyed this as much for what it was trying to do as for what it did. I just felt the constantly bouncing around in time didn't do great for the story. To your point, the introduction to the characters could have and should have been a little both smoother and more pointed, I guess.
Yeah, I perfect. Yeah.
Because there are a couple of times where in the you were talking in the book club and somebody's like, it's the kid with Johnny. Oh, yeah, that's Haji or whatever. Because they hadn't made it clear who all of these people were.
Exactly. Yeah. I felt like there was a gem of the story that almost happened. Mm-hmm. You know, when we started reading this in the first issue, and then he opens up to that page where you're seeing Haji and Johnny Quest flying with their backpacks.
Yeah.
I got those vibes and I got the feeling of, all right, cool. This is like Flash Gordon. This is going to be light, airy action, adventure, fun. And to have it just switch so suddenly was just a little bit disappointing. And at the same time, I think the last three issues, it became more enjoyable. But it was that the first, I want to say 8 issues, I was just like, man, we had something there. And so I was just disappointed that it wasn't executed better.
I thought the first issue was a strong start.
Yes.
When 2 and 3 were backpedaling and stuff, that got a little annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, I think around, I want to say 5, maybe 6 or whatever, it started moving forward again. But again, there were peaks, there were valleys. And I think what really would have been nice in the book club would have been if we had somebody, and again, Jason, at least on the Johnny Quest side, I think certainly could have provided this, who actually had some recent knowledge of these characters. Are they in line with the cartoon? Where did they veer? Where did they... Because there are going to be places where you have to. You've got to change it up just a little. But is it a subtle evolution and retooling or a radical wholesale change? You know, why did the Impossibles get this new fourth member here? Was there a need for that? Was there not? You know, things of that sort to give us a little more grounding and context. And that's the kind of thing I try to provide when we're doing DC Marvel stuff that I know the backstories on.
Oh, yeah, you're excellent at that. It helps broaden my knowledge.
When I've seen some of these cartoons, again, it was decades ago.
Yeah, it's so long ago. I mean, at some point, like, we grew up and we weren't watching Space Ghost anymore. Or it wasn't being aired. I don't know when that happened.
I don't think it's a matter that we outgrew these characters. I think it's a matter of we had nothing better to do with our time back then.
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly it.
And I don't mean to denigrate any of the people who worked on any of those cartoons. They were fun. They were great. I loved them as a kid and stuff. But let's face it, cartoons, particularly of that era, were shallow. They didn't have time to develop a story.
No, it was aimed at 6, 7, 8 year olds, however old we were. And it was literally to give our parents a breather. And we would sit in front of the TV while they were making breakfast on Saturday, or they were sleeping in from the work week. And that's the Saturday morning cartoons. And then by the time we start rousing about after we ate our bowl of cereal, mom and dad are like a little bit rested and ready to go.
Well, with Johnny Quest being the exception, because it was a full half hour story slot or whatever, the rest of these were usually half hour slots divided into 3 chunks, and you had a story each chunk. So
yeah.
Between the commercial breaks. So if you had more than a 7-minute story, and that includes the, let's give the recap of this is Space Ghost or Frankenstein Jr. or whatever, there's no room.
Yeah. I think the cartoons I have the most fond memories of, as far as cartoons go, are probably Scooby-Doo and the Flintstones. And I know you said they went on at night, but I could have swore I watched them in the morning. Maybe they came back on in the morning.
Oh, no, no. They absolutely were in the morning. Scooby-Doo, definitely. Okay. Flintstones originally was at night.
And then it's re-syndicated in the morning? Or?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cause,
decades later.
Yeah, I had to watch something that my older sister liked too. Because I wasn't going to be watching G.I. Joe because she wasn't into that or whatever, you know, whatever have you. If it's more of a boy one, we weren't watching it. It was more the neutral one. A boy and a girl could watch it together.
Well, it's funny because like the Scooby-Doo stuff, that's all Hanna-Barbera too, but that's a different camp of characters.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the ones I remember we watched a lot of Captain Caveman. So I didn't get to see Captain Caveman in here, so I was a little disappointed.
Well, again, that was the other side. That was more the mystery one, because it was Captain Caveman and the Teen Angels. And that was just, okay, let's go solve the mystery of the week.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's weird, because these were definitely not in my wheelhouse that much. Space Ghost was the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I saw the Herculoids a couple episodes, but my sister really wasn't into it. And she was older, so, I get beat up if I didn't watch what she wanted to watch.
I'd seen those. I'd seen some of the Galaxy Trio, hence my disappointment that they were just a token appearance at best. I remember that I saw Frankenstein Jr., but I couldn't tell you much about it at all. Same with some of the other stuff.
Yeah, that guy, Frankenstein Jr., that's new to me, completely new. I never saw that guy and hardly saw him in this book.
Well, the other thing that got me was Shazam, the genie.
Yeah.
Was referenced a few times here, but not part of the story. And I'm like, why not?
That's weird. They like you said, they referenced it, and I was like, did I miss something? But no, not there.
Not there at all.
That was weird. I don't even know why they mentioned the character if they're not going to show him.
The other one that was kind of weird is they used the name Gargantuan for the body that Frankenstein Jr. ends up in.
Yes.
But my understanding is that's the American name of an anime that was kind of sort of the spiritual ancestor of this property.
Oh.
But not actually part of the Hanna-Barbera property.
That I did not know. Interesting.
That's the impression I got from Wikipedia and some other stuff.
Okay.
So I thought it was interesting they actually used the name.
Very interesting. Huh.
But like when they were mentioning Fear, the evil group, or Internation, the good guy spy group and a few things like that. It's like, I know that was part of the Hanna-Barbera stuff. Could I tell you if Internation was from Johnny Quest, The Impossibles, Frankenstein Jr., Birdman, or all of them? No.
No clue. And Jeff Parker's not going to tell you either.
Well, and I think it was Brawlinator who mentioned in the book club how nice it would have been to have gotten like a Handbook of the Marvel Universe sort of thing for this.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have even a character sheet, you know, yeah. Or something. And that was missing, and it felt like a missed opportunity. Not that I want the guy to do all his research, but hey, man, you're getting paid to write the comic. You should know about these characters. Give me a little sheet and give me a little hint as to who you're writing about, who you're mentioning.
Yeah.
Like you said, we got the Birdman and he had a force field. And I was like, huh, I didn't know he could do that. I just thought he flew around.
Well, he's got the Bird Avenger. Why?
Does it do anything? To this day, I still don't know. It's just a bird that's flying around. We don't know what Avenger does other than fly.
It seems like if you're going to do this kind of a story, you're going to have written up the rough equivalent of that kind of a show Bible anyways. You may as well spend a little extra effort, get it to where you could publish it and make some money off it.
Exactly. What's funny with this is I had more fun meeting with you guys mm-hmm. than the book. And like I said, that's not an indictment of the thing, but this is not one of the best titles, I think, definitely not, that Jeff Parker's written. And I feel like if you're a big fan of these characters, you may feel some nostalgia and you'd enjoy it. But if you're like me and you don't know them, you might appreciate a few things, but you might question execution and find it difficult to read at times, just as far as the fun, you know, quotient of the factoring.
Absolutely. The other thing I do want to point out is out of all of us at the book club, you were the youngest.
Yes, I was. I'm only 50. I'll be turning 51, and people are older than me. Yes.
So, you know, we've got one person, Chris Meyer, who was there, was around when these things were airing originally.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
So, different frame of reference, I think, is some of it, too. And because I do think there is some really solid merit to a lot of these issues, not so much for the totality of it, because at times it felt like there was one original story that they maybe reshuffled. I want to know if there's a behind-the-scenes story about this.
Yeah.
You know, what did they set out to do? Did they end up doing it? Did they re-vector? Why? How? When? But again, we're going to do more book clubs, at least one more on it, and that's going to be on September 12th.
Cool.
We got 9 more issues. We're not going to get through all of them. But anyone can join the book club. You just need to show up. Let us know on Slack or the forum that you want to join in. If you haven't signed up for those, there's instructions on the front page of the website. You need to fill in the form. You also need to email me saying, I am a real person. You would not believe the amount of automated bots trying to get into the forum and stuff. But if I know you're real, you know, just a line or two to let me know you're a person, I'll add you to the Slack channel or approve you for the forum and stuff. We've got instructions on how to join into the book club. And the book is as much an excuse to get together as, you know, an actual topic of discussion.
Yeah.
So we often spend at least half an hour either before or at the end just how's everybody doing, what's going on, as well as just talking this stuff. And I'd love to have somebody there who actually has more in-depth knowledge of these characters.
Yeah, exactly. And to your point on that, we have a good group of people and we have a ton of fun. Like Chris Myers, he had gone to Toronto Fan Expo.
Yeah, that was cool.
And he had dinner with the people from Ghost Machine, Jeff Johns, and mm-hmm. I can't remember who the heck else is at Ghost Machine. And he was showing us pictures and talking about meeting them. He went to Jim Zub's Conan panel. So we just sit and we shoot the breeze, and it's not even always comics. We just have a good time where I feel like I'm really friends with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even if we haven't met in person, you know, we're buddies.
Yeah, yeah. It's a ton of fun. And again, we're looking for more people to join in the conversation. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, but interesting read. Not the best, but not horrible either. It's decent. So give it a shot if you're a fan of the characters.
Yeah. I like what they tried to do with all the different artists. It really makes me wonder if there were just some production issues behind the scenes.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Which is a shame because, like you said, there's a germ of a brilliant story here. I think in many cases, it's at the verge of cracking through and really showing up. But in other places, not so much.
Yeah, but I agree.
I enjoyed it a lot. I had a lot of fun with it, even if I don't think it was the best written thing. Or in some cases, it's not that it wasn't the best drawing. There was some beautiful art, but the wild inconsistencies in styles
didn't work.
I'm assuming the editor had no choice, and that's who he could get.
Yeah.
That seems a little far-fetched, too. Anyways, ton of fun. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
cool.
Recording clips for the Preview Spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the Preview Spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next Preview Spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.